Good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works, to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns is aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a dialogue we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves, and we hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And a reminder that we are recording this show in advance and won't be taking any calls today. Well, this afternoon we're talking about Healthy Acadia. Healthy Acadia was founded 25 years ago to build resources and pathways for people in Hancock and Washington counties, leading to healthier lives. It's a partnership and it's a collaboration, and it's a great model for how to accomplish this important work. And we have some wonderful guests in the studio with us to talk about that. Be asking each of them to introduce themselves, but I'll lead off by saying we have Elsie Flemings, who's the executive director of Healthy Acadia. Maria Donahue is the community health director. We'll find out what that means in a minute. And Katie Friedman, who is the community health and food programs director. Liz Graves will be joining us shortly, and she'll kind of feed in. But let's get started by asking each of you to provide a little bit of background on yourselves and how you came to this work in health promotion. Elsie, could we start with you? How did you get started in all this?
Happy to, Ron, and thank you so much for having us here. It's delightful. So I'm Elsie Flemings, Executive Director with Healthy Acadia. And I actually came to Healthy Acadia in 2009. So gosh, that's 17 years ago. And I evolved through several roles and became the Executive Director in 2014. And I actually was hired for a 6-month project leading a community health assessment and planning process. And I guess the rest is history. Here I am. And what drew me to Healthy Acadia, I was very much drawn towards the mission of the organization. Even then, when it was much smaller, Healthy Acadia had such a strong track record of meaningful work and impact, improving health and building stronger communities. And I've always been passionate about wanting to help my communities address challenges, supporting everyone to have the opportunity to thrive. And this was the home for me.
Great, great. Maria, talk a little bit about how you came to the work of Healthy Acadia. Maria is the community health director for the organization.
Sure. Thanks, Ron. Yeah, community health and prevention director. I have a background in public health, and I've been with Healthy Acadia since 2012. But my work has actually gone, it goes back further with Healthy Acadia. I've been involved with the organization since 2007, when I had a role as a school partner, running a coordinated school health program at our local school system. And that was kind of a companion program. At that time, there were statewide programs for school health, and then there were community health partners. Healthy Acadia was our community partner, and I was involved with the Advisory Council of Healthy Acadia. I think I recall you from way back in those days too, Ron, between 2007 and 2012. And then that school program ended. And at that time, I kind of transitioned pretty seamlessly to Healthy Acadia since I'd had some familiarity with that organization, and then began doing similar work to what I had been doing, but more on the community level instead of the school level. And one of the things that I've loved about this work is that it's my role here is not static. So I've had my hands on lots of different public health areas. One common thread since the beginning of my time has been sort of overseeing our tobacco and substance prevention work, as well as some youth engagement work. But I've had lots of other programming areas that have kind of come and gone during that time. And one of the other big roles that I currently have is serving as the Eastern AHEC director, which is an area health education center. And we'll probably talk more about the details throughout this session. But so I wear a few different hats at Healthy Acadia and different program areas. And that's one of the things I love about public health.
And where were you working in a school system? What school were you represented?
With the Mount Desert Island Regional School System, just currently AOS 91.
Great. And Katie Friedman. Katie is the Community Health and Food Programs Director, a longtime passionate advocate for food security. Glad to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you kind of became interested in Healthy Acadia.
So glad to be here, Ron. Thank you for having us. I've been with the organization since the mid-2000s, and am the de facto organizational historian because no one's been here longer than me at this point. And I originally got involved as a volunteer for a local foods related project that you were also involved in, Ron. So our history goes way back as well. So that's how I originally got involved with the organization. Healthy Acadia was supporting this project in the MDI area. And I got involved as a college student and as a volunteer. And I've been with the organization ever since. I sort of transitioned from that volunteer role into an AmeriCorps role and then eventually into a staff role. And have been here working to improve healthy food access for all ever since. And it's been a dream for me.
Great, great. And Liz Graves is with us this morning as well. Glad you could do that. So jump in anytime, Liz, with questions as we proceed. But let's start with Elsie and give us a sense of the role of Healthy Acadia as evolved. It started with a small organization. It's now two counties. To give us a little snapshot of that history, and if you need any help, sounds like Katie can help you.
Yes, exactly. Sure, happy to. Yes. So our mission, folks don't know, is to empower people and organizations as we build healthy communities together. Our vision is vibrant communities where people thrive and healthful resources are easily accessible. And this really is the core of who we are, and who we were from the beginning, 2001 when we started. Really at the core, the things we do, so we're public and community health. We think about big systems changes that help build healthy communities in the long term. We provide boots on the ground, programming and services. We bring people together, we convene, we do a lot of convening people and partners to address health challenges as they're emerging. We do a lot of assessment and planning to understand the health context of our communities and how we can best play a role in improving health. And as I said, we build and implement programs and services. And also really think about long-term transformation, such as through policies, systems, and environmental changes. What really has changed in the 25 years is how we've been able to grow so significantly and have just a far, far broader and deeper impact in that core mission, who we are. As Ron said, we started serving a small number of towns with 1.5 staff members, and we're now, as Ron said, fully, deeply immersed across Washington and Hancock counties, and we do have some programs that are further beyond and covering multiple counties, and even some leadership training work that we do statewide. Again, we went from 1.5 staff in 2001 to now between 70 and 80 staff at any time of the year. That actually ramps up in the winter when we run an overnight winter warming shelter. And maybe we'll talk about that as well. And so that's really what we do. We engage community members, partners, we assess and plan to understand, and we implement programs in partnership and collaboration with so many others to build healthier communities.
And how would you distinguish the work that you're doing as an organization, which I might call health promotion, versus health care? Talk a little bit about that sometimes blurry line, but tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, great. Great question. So yes, we yes, exactly. And we think of ourselves like health promotion. We think of ourselves in sort of the public health and community health bucket. Public health is almost like even bigger picture policy systems changes. Community health is one might think of it more of that boots on the ground delivering change, but that is not non-clinical. So those are our spaces. And so we versus the healthcare sector that one would think of as more clinical interventions responding to an individual's specific healthcare needs. And so we're very much part of all the healthcare sector, and then we in community and public health are very much pieces of the puzzle that together, you know, that we need each other and many other partners to build healthy communities and address the challenges that we all face. And we're just sort of different pieces of the puzzle. So for us, right, we're thinking systems changes, policy changes, et cetera. Then we're also working on boots on the ground programs and initiatives that I'm sure we'll talk about soon that support the health of individuals and communities in a non-clinical way. So things like prevention, education, recovery supports, all those social determinants of health that you know, where we think about housing, food, transportation, et cetera. So those are all the spaces we work in. And then actually another overlap with the healthcare sector is we're very close partners with the healthcare sector, with all of our hospitals and federally qualified health centers and other clinicians, behavioral health, et cetera. Part of what we do is convene and organize and support what that sector needs. And actually, maybe Maria, looping back to you, had briefly mentioned AHEC. This might be a good moment, if there's time, Ron, to give a quick example there.
Sure, and I would just point out that Health Decatur started as a division of Mount Zion Hospital. So the sectors have morphed and changed over the years, and the hospital said, "No, that's really not our role," and that's what led to the creation of Health Decatur as a separate nonprofit organization. But Maria, back to you in terms of AHEC, which you and you better tell us those initials again.
Okay, so AHEC stands for Area Health Education Center. So Healthy Acadia has been serving as the Eastern Maine Area Health Education Center since 2023. It's a relatively newer program. And with that program, the service area includes Washington, Hancock, Knox, and Waldo counties. So that's one of the projects that Elsie mentioned that extends beyond down East Maine, which we think of as typically Hancock and Washington counties. This is our program in partnership with the University of New England. They're the primary grant recipient. It's a project that's funded through HRSA, the Health Resources Services Administration. It's a national program. I think there are over 300 AHEC sites across the United States. And the main AHEC network mission is to prepare and support Maine's healthcare workforce by creating healthcare learning opportunities for youth, students, and professionals to foster healthier communities and expand access to care. So we do that in a few different ways. We provide community-based clinical training experiences to health profession students. So students that might be on a clinical rotation with an area hospital, I often engage with them and connect them to some local community service organizations, resources in the area, so that they know what's out there and can help bring those resources back to their patients that they're serving. Trying to kind of take a holistic approach to health and community resources that are available. I work to encourage Maine youth to pursue careers in the health profession, so to help address those healthcare workforce shortages. So we've got some programs that we've been doing with middle school and high school students to introduce them to healthcare careers and maybe encourage them to pursue different areas. We also work on some continuing education programs for practicing health professionals. And
So
so
that's really responding to some of the things we talked about just before we started recording, and that's the fact that we don't necessarily have enough healthcare workers in this region and many rural places. And what you're saying is let's grow some of that that support from the community itself. It's easier to have that than bring someone in from a different place, perhaps, and kind of understand the community. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Before we delve into programs more, I have another kind of overall question slash observation. This is Liz, if I may. Hi again, everybody. So I'm excited. I'm so glad we asked about what's the difference from healthcare. And Elsie, in answering that question, answered my other question, but now I'll draw it out some more, which is what's the difference between public health and community health? And you got us started on that. I have been stumped being around Healthy Acadia for a long time about what does community health mean? And we've started in, and I'm just eager to continue to draw this out and use it as we're talking about programs, which is that it was really clear from what Elsie just said that, like, oh, okay, clinicians are one-on-one with patients. almost all of the time. And our human systems are never one-on-one. We are not healthy or unhealthy on our own. Like that's not how health works. So that was just super helpful to think of both what healthcare providers need and what we humans who need to be healthy need. And that is almost all a direct connection to our to Talk of the Towns show last month, which was with Dar Williams, and we talked about healthy communities from another angle. We talked about community development, but it's all similar ideas. Her phrase is positive proximity, and it strikes me that a lot of what Elsie uses the word convening a lot of what Healthy Acadia does is bring community members in contact with each other, and with resources, and that's something that healthcare providers themselves, individually, one-on-one with their patients, can't easily do.
Well, this is a good time just to remind listeners what we're all about here this afternoon. We're talking about Healthy Acadia, been in existence for 25 years, and we're celebrating that work with Elsie Flemings, who's the executive director of the organization. Maria Donahue is the community health and prevention director, and Katie Friedman is the community health and food programs director. So let's you've described kind of this I'm gonna call it from birth to whatever happens after that, kind of range of programs. You've characterized in at least one publication, strong beginnings, healthy aging, active and healthy environments, healthy food for all, substance prevention and recovery, health promotion and management, basic needs, and health equity. You know, that really is the landscape that you're working in. Perhaps each of you could, maybe we'll start with Katie because she hasn't had a voice in very much yet, but talk a little bit about how you kind of bring that focus, and especially in terms of healthy food for all, out into the community. What who are your partners? You know, what kinds of programs do you have, Katie?
Sure. Within our Healthy Food for All focus area, our overall goal is to ensure that all people have access to nutritious, affordable food, and we're always trying to make the healthy choice the easy choice. So that really gets at what Liz was talking about just a minute ago. What is the landscape that people are, moving through their lives in, and do they have the opportunity to make healthy choices? Do they have sort of the knowledge and education to make those choices? And do they have the actual ability to do that? So when it comes to food, we're talking about, wherever people are sourcing their food, whether it's at a grocery store, a farmer's market, a food pantry, a community supper, we want to make sure that, regardless of their income, regardless of their circumstance or background, that they're able to do what we all know leads to a healthier life, which is eating more fruits and vegetables, more whole grains, those sorts of things. And so we do that through a number of different programmatic initiatives. We have a healthy eating, active living initiative. We're working in schools and childcares primarily to help make those environments healthier, more opportunities for physical activity and healthy eating. We have a nutrition education program called Nourish Me, which is brand new, which is replacing the previous program that was ended recently. But there's a new program that's rolling out now called Nourish Me. And so that's all ramping up, and we're going to be doing a lot of nutrition education. Interfacing with the goal of helping to prevent chronic disease, and interfacing with clinical settings a lot through that work. And then we have our healthy food access work. Within that body of work, our three major initiatives are the Gleaning Initiative, Down East Restorative Harvest, and Folklore Farm. In the Gleaning Initiative, we're harvesting surplus food from farms and farmers markets and other food venues and distributing it through a vast network. We have amazing infrastructure. It's a really robust and well-run program where we're delivering or distributing produce to food pantries, community meal sites, and other food security organizations. Down East Restorative Harvest is a small community farm in Machias where we're growing food for the county jail as well as area food pantries and providing opportunities for folks to be on the farm in a restorative way. And then Folklore Farm is our newest initiative, which is a partnership with a previously a commercial farm who has come under Healthy Acadia's nonprofit umbrella, and now we're running it as a community and food bank farm, and that's in Cherryfield. And then we work in a number of other ways as well. We convene food security networks, we run food drives, we support the Maine Senior Farm Share program, we support SNAP access at farmers markets, and all sorts of things. And it's all, all put together. What we're trying to do is, like I said, just make sure that wherever you're sourcing your food, you have the opportunity to access fresh vegetables primarily, and healthy foods overall.
Great, wonderful array of programs so that anybody that's either interested in providing food or receiving food that's healthy has an opportunity to get engaged. Elsie,
And
do
if
you
I
want?
can add,
Yes.
anybody who's interested in anywhere along the way, volunteering to
That's
collect
right.
the food, distribute the food, et cetera. There are so many places. And we, as Katie mentioned, involve so many volunteers, which is a really also cornerstone of what we do. Yeah, lots of ways to get involved.
Maria, go a little bit deeper into some of the work, the other work that you're doing in terms of prevention and so on.
Sure. I can talk about substance prevention and recovery if that's where you
Great.
want to go next.
Great.
So this is a really big focus area. This area, the goal is to support people of all ages to live lives free of substance misuse and substance use disorder, and to support individuals through their recovery journey. So kind of along the whole continuum. In terms of prevention work, we are providing prevention education in schools, working to reduce use of substances with a particular focus on alcohol, cannabis, and prescription medications. And we do this through a variety of strategies, such as direct education using evidence-based curricula. We do messaging through public service announcements, newsletter articles, those kinds of communications. And then we have a mix of environmental strategies that are designed to reduce access to substances. Some examples of this are things like responsible beverage server and seller trainings, which we have trained staff who can conduct these with either workers, employees who work at stores that sell alcohol, either for consumption offsite, such as a grocery store or convenience store, or restaurants and bars that are serving alcohol for consumption on site. So that training is designed to provide some safe serving and selling practices, help the staff identify if somebody has been overserved and maybe shouldn't be served more. And so those are some trainings that we have been doing, I think, since the beginning of our time with Healthy Acadia. We also do some environmental strategies to promote safe storage and disposal of prescription medications, as well as cannabis products. So we have some like lock boxes and lock bags that we make available to individuals in the community where they can store these products safely so that children and pets aren't getting into them, or they're not getting into the hands of people that shouldn't be using them. So that's just kind of a snippet of some of the prevention programming that we do. And then in terms of recovery, we have recovery coaching, like really comprehensive recovery coaching services. Elsie mentioned that some of our programs extend through other areas, and this is in a number of counties. And Elsie, maybe you can jump in a moment, but recovery coaching, we also have in Machias Safe Harbor Home for Women and Children. This is a recovery home because there were no such homes available for women going through recovery, needing a safe place to live and to be able to bring their children with them. So that was established, I think, in 2001, as a result of, sorry, 2021, as a result of
20.
community that opened during COVID, result of community need. So
Would
just some.
you just define for listeners recovery? That's a term that it's relatively new. Talk a little bit about how you understand recovery.
Sure. So recovery is there's a continuum. So people who are looking to stop using substances, maybe in recovery from either alcohol use disorder or opioid use disorder, some kind of substance use disorder, and that can look like total abstinence, or they, maybe they're working to become, fully abstinent from something, but it's an evolution. And so we have coaches that are available to support folks in recovery, and they can provide resources. They're kind of like a peer. It's a non-clinical position, but they serve to provide resources. Sometimes people need housing, as I mentioned, so they might be able to make connections. Some people are trying to get back into the workforce, so provide resources in terms of professional development. Also, do you want to speak about our recovery internship program?
Oh, I can, sure. Yeah, I can jump in. And yeah, it's really evolved. As you said, Ron, some of this is newer. We actually, in about 2015, 2016, like the idea of peer recovery coaching was very new, really wasn't happening in Maine. And we had heard about it. Some of our staff were very excited. We ended up sending them to Connecticut to get trained in a nationally recognized program that has strong evidence base. And since then, we then were able to gather resources, funds, and start a pilot project. And then it's sort of grown from there. So now actually the state supports us with a contract to be one of two statewide trainers in the peer recovery coach model. So we're training
That's
hundreds
awesome.
of people around the state each year. And then we coordinate recovery coach services both in our home territory of Hancock and Washington counties, as well as across 10 other counties, working to support local organizations to house interns, and then providing that supervision. It's actually called coach revision, and ongoing support that's very specific to this line of work that is very impactful. And then actually from there, we just a couple of years ago were able to start a pilot youth recovery coaching. So the co recovery coaching prior was for adults 18 and over. This is for training young people to coach younger folks, so either who are impacted by substance use disorder in the home, or who they themselves are struggling, and that has been incredible, and we're hoping to expand that as well. But we're providing youth coaching across the two counties. And actually, jumping back to all the overlap with the healthcare sector, we are just launching recovery coaching in hospitals, including in the emergency departments. So that's again a very strong partnership with our hospital partners, and to embed even further and create even more continuity of care, so that folks who need these supports wherever they are can get them, and improve health outcomes for everyone.
That is awesome news. And I know we're so excited about the work that it'd be easy to talk the whole show about any one program area. So we're going to try to zoom you back out. And we'll stick with Elsie for a moment and talk a little more about how partnerships work. I assume from your role in the organization, that's a lot of what you spend your attention on. But also we noticed that like lots of job descriptions, position descriptions say that this person is going to sustain high impact collaborative relationships with partner organizations. So it's something that everybody does. So how do you think about that broadly? And then maybe other folks can start thinking of examples.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think as maybe is starting to become clear as we're talking, so much, really everything we do is in partnership. Obviously we partner internally among our staff, and build out teams to implement programs. We develop programs collaboratively with partner organizations, community members. We really are guided by community voices in what we do, so that what we do is locally responsive and meets community needs. We convene partners. We run a number of collaboratives that are actively meeting, bringing partners together. We have a Down East housing collaborative that's thinking about housing across the continuum of care. We have a substance use response collaborative. Actually, two sort of a Hancock County primarily and Washington County primarily coalitions thinking about substance use response and substance treatment. Katie mentioned food security networks. We're convening those partners, so we're always mindful in making sure that these convenings are meeting a need, and we're not overly meeting just to meet. And so we adapt as needed, but really fill that role. And so much comes out of those convenings in terms of relationship building, project development, addressing barriers, et cetera, improving what we're doing. And in general, everything we do, and I know we touched on just maybe two, we maybe even only got to two of the focus areas that Ron had mentioned. You listed those eight focus areas. It's not, as you could probably understand, those aren't like a specific program. It's rather how we think about our work. So, a specific program might cut across a few program areas, but as Ron alluded to, so across those eight program areas, from strong beginnings, healthy aging, and all the other ones we didn't talk about, we have a lot of different programming happening. And in general, as we do that, as we build out programs, we really think about across those focus areas. We just really think about what is our best role. If a need comes to our attention, we think, is this a role we play a supportive role and another organization is taking a lead? Is this something we lead? Is it something we co-create? The Safe Harbor Recovery Home for Women is a great example of it being foundationally. Four organizations got together in Washington County and developed this together. Downey's Community Partners at the time, the Community Caring Collaborative, AMHC as a behavioral health provider, and Healthy Acadia. And so, ended up being that DCP actually owned the building. We ended up, being, again, through that sort of process of who does what, what's everybody's best role. The team agreed our best role was to run the program. So we do run the program, the staff, et cetera. And then Community Caring Collaborative and AMHC provide really strong clinical, AMHC provides really strong clinical guidance and support. And Community Caring Collaborative provides strong community knowledge and support. And so that's a great example of a collaborative. So lots is happening in partnership, really everything we do. So.
We'll ask both Maria and Katie for some other examples that they haven't talked about yet, but I'll just remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're celebrating the work of Healthy Acadia over 25 years. You just heard from Elsie Flemings, who's the executive director of Healthy Acadia program. Maria Donahue is with us. She's the Community Health and Prevention Director, and Katie Friedman is the Community Health and Food Programs Director. Maria, maybe one example of another partnership that you'd like to kind of highlight in terms of your work and how you help with that partnership.
Sure. I've talked a lot about some of the clinical partnerships through the AHEC program, so I won't dwell on that anymore. But lots of healthcare partnerships there. Another program area that we haven't spoken about yet is it's one of our youth-focused program areas, which is extended learning opportunities. We have an ELO coordinator who is working with students in schools to connect them to workforce development opportunities with local businesses, and they can get credit for those experiences. So these are students for whom traditional school pathways may not be the best fit for them. And so connecting them with some opportunities outside of school where they can learn some skills. We've got students that are working in the fishing industry, and getting some credit-bearing experience for that opportunity. We've had students that are placed in childcare settings, and learning how to work with children in daycare. And so these are partnerships with schools, with businesses. Some of that work is supported with funding from the Department of Education, and we work with other local organizations, such as Rural Aspirations, as one of the organizations heavily involved in that work. And they're an organization that works collaboratively with schools, institutions, nonprofit organizations, and agencies to help build and expand educational and professional learning opportunities for rural students and teachers.
Good. Katie, how about another example from your line of work of the importance of partnerships?
Yeah, it's really not an exaggeration to say that every single thing that we do in our food programs is in partnership. One really recent example with Downeaster Sort of Harvest, we had hoped to, one of our foundational goals is to connect the food that we're growing there with people who are impacted by the justice system. And so, one way that we're going about doing that, we reach out to folks with internally within our recovery programming, recovery coaching programming, to just brainstorm like how could we be getting more of this produce to the folks that you're serving or their families? Not to say that everyone in recovery coaching is justice involved, but as sort of a way in to connect with folks. And so they connected us with folks at AMHC, which runs the treatment court in Washington County. And so we've had our first delivery of veggies of this new program and partnership at treatment court. So people are going to treatment court a certain number of days per month. And so we can be there with fresh produce, both from Folklore Farm and from Downeaster Sort of Harvest, and deliver the veggies. And it's the sort of thing we could never just show up. We would look crazy just showing up with veggies, like, hey, but since we were connecting with the right people, and they're giving us an introduction and letting the people who are participating in treatment know that we are, a trusted organization, that we're legitimate and that we're here to help, just increase their access to fresh produce. It went really well. The participants were so thrilled and excited, just tickled to see that we had brought this produce to them. And so I feel like it's really the beginning of a beautiful new partnership
That's a
for
great
us.
example and so inspiring. I'm really excited about that particular thing. So I'm going to veer again. The hour, of course, is always going faster than we might have even expected. So I want to combine a couple of questions. Elsie mentioned that there's a lot of meetings and a lot of names of groups and collaboratives, and it's important to be sure when something new is starting up that it's not being started, that it's meeting a need and it's not for its own sake. And so I'm curious about the life cycle of a project and how success is measured all the way along, and when it's maybe when it's time for something to sunset or evolve into something else. And so that's one half of the question, and the other half is, what is the landscape for support for all these programs? And there's lots of sources, and presumably supporters want to know about measuring success. So that's why I thought I could ask at the same time. I guess maybe I'll see it unless anyone else is really eager with a thought on that.
I don't mind starting at a high
Okay,
level, and then
great.
Katie and Maria, you can
Cool.
jump in. Yeah, those are both two good and big questions. Maybe starting with the landscape for su su the support piece. We do so. We, as you've heard, we have a lot of different programs, and we really build those programs out. And of course, we need resources to do the work, people, volunteers, partners, et cetera. And we've talked about that. And then, of course, also funds. And we started with a single grant from the state through the tobacco settlement funds, actually, which had come through to Maine in the late 90s, early 2000s, and everything ramped up in 2001. And so those were our humble origins. And so now we absolutely still, the state is a very strong partner in a lot of this work. So we have some ongoing partnerships with them, like the recovery coaching in hospitals and the youth, for example, and the training. So we will be able to secure state resources. We also secure federal resources. Sometimes that's like the AHEC program that Maria mentioned comes from a federal agency through the state to us, and sometimes it's direct applying for grants directly. And then we have and then and that's a piece of the puzzle, but does not meet our whole the whole needs for it to be able to be responsive and really have the kind of impact we're committed to having across the communities. And so that's a part. Then we also really rely on private funding. So that's both private grants, foundation grants, et cetera, as well as very much and increasingly philanthropy, community donations, business donations, et cetera. And together, it's really that combination is so important. It enables us to be really effective, to be have a deep and a broad reach, and to be able to pivot quickly, to be able to respond to new needs, to sustain important programs, et cetera. And so we're really, really grateful and really very mindful about continuing to have that diversity of resources, because sometimes some change quickly and unexpectedly. At other times, there's a really urgent new need, and going through a long public process of grant writing does not meet that need, et cetera. Sometimes certain programs end, and having the ability to, as you said, Liz, not continue a program just because we want to or we've done it before, but because the need is there, we want to be able to do that. So that's sort of the funding side of it. And I guess, yeah, and then sort of combined then with measuring success. So understanding the needs and what success means and how we evolve programs. So we're continuously measuring and trying to understand. We talked about community health asset, like understanding and assessing the community broadly, needs broadly. And also what is the impact of our programming? So we have quantitative measurements, and I won't get into too many details. Maybe Katie and Maria have some time to get into that, but you know, pounds, stuff, people, et cetera. We have qualitative measurements, you know, like pre and post surveys when we've done a training or a class, and how do people feel about it, or long-term, surveys and conversations, interviews, focus groups, et cetera. What was the impact? We think about short-term measurements, like what happened, you know, what happened in this moment, what food was delivered, what item was delivered, and then long-term. And that's obviously more complicated, but we think a lot about and work hard to try to measure that long-term impact, somebody's long-term recovery success, et cetera. And yes, so funding sources will come with expectations, or we'll work together with a funder to develop measurements and that continual assessment, both of the community needs as well as our program impact, helps us then guide our program development and delivery so that we are responsive, so that we're impactful, so that we're focusing on evolving in ways that really meet the need and have the impact that we want to have.
I would just add that other states have long histories of having public health divisions or public health entities, and sometimes those are rather cumbersome and staid. And Maine seems to have developed a model that's a little more responsive. So instead of having a public health entity, they're working with partners like Healthy Acadia throughout the state to kind of keep fresh. I don't know if that observation holds true or not. Elsie, any thoughts about that big picture question?
Oh, it's such an interesting piece. We talk about the fact that we are one of only three states that does not have county public health departments, which is, I think, what you were referencing.
Yeah.
Which is a challenge, but also, you know, one can think of it as a challenge on one hand, but also a strength in another way. And that really, when we talked about the origins of us in 2001, tobacco settlement came, the funding came to Maine. Maine leaders, public health leaders, legislative leaders were really committed to trying to use the funding in a meaningful way for public health. We really were struggling with no coordinated local public health infrastructure, but that funding wasn't the amount of funding that would be really needed to develop that kind of county-based public health. So what they looked at was thinking about a really creative public-private partnership, basically public nonprofit partnership, where the state CDC, so we do have a statewide public health agency, just not those county-based entities, and then, as you know, we have two public health departments in cities, Bangor and Portland, and that's it. And so then the rest of it is this public-private partnership. And so that is what started in 2001. And it's absolutely right. I mean, when we think about this region, we are in many ways that local public health department for Washington Hancock counties. We're not all of it. There are other partners that play important roles that might otherwise be filled by a public health department. But together we are creating that that kind of system. And there is some great, because we are who we are, we're a nonprofit, we can be nimble and effective in different ways. There is a lot of opportunity there to be responsive, as you had said. So yeah, it's an interesting context that is not common among states, but we love where we are and what we're able to do. Yeah.
This is
So
a
now,
great
go
idea for
ahead.
another show. I'm always get excited that we do have. There's a requirement. There's lots of things. We're called Talk of the Towns. We talk a lot about the role of the towns themselves,
Yes.
and each town is supposed to have a local health officer. So we'll do a whole show about that, and we'll maybe have somebody from Lake Acadia too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the towns were one of those that I mentioned. You know, they're like, we're not it. There are many other, because there isn't that court, you know, public health, you know, like a county public health department, for example. Many more of us are playing roles. And there's also a district coordinating council. Al May is a wonderful, amazing resource who's our district liaison. So he's part of the state CDC, but focused on Washington Hancock counties and convening the district public health council that we're very much a part of. So there are many important players, partners in this work.
So I'm gonna ask both Katie and Maria for an example of a program success that you'd just like to highlight. And how did you measure that success? Again, we don't have to go down into the weeds, but just how did you know it was a successful program? Katie, can we start with you and then go to Maria?
Sure. I mean, in our food programs, we sort of have it easy because we are distributing food. So we measure it in the pounds of foods that we distributed, the types of food. So we're tracking, it was it carrots, was it lettuce, and how many pounds of each, and what food security organizations did it go to. And so, within the gleaning initiative, last year, we distributed over 22,000 pounds of food. And so we're, and within all of our programs, we're sort of measuring, it's in the hundreds of thousands now, if you look across, the years that we've been doing this work. We also look at success in terms of our partnership, like strengthening our partnerships and like building capacity but within the food security organizations and the farms that we work with. And so, we're always looking for opportunities where we can develop like a gleaning relationship, for example, between a farm and a food security organization, and then sort of step back so that it's something that the food pantry's board members or volunteers can like maintain over time and kind of do that gleaning and bring the produce in directly so that our staff can kind of pivot and work on another relationship with other organizations in another part of the region. So one example of that is with the Bar Harbor Food Pantry, for many, many years, our staff or volunteers were going to the Sunday Farmers Market in Bar Harbor and gleaning kind of what all of the providers were not going to take home at the end of the day. And so we'd come in with our crates and they'd put in the produce. And eventually we were able to provide some training to the board members of the food pantry to go in and do that themselves. And so our staff were kind of freed up to move on to support another relationship somewhere else. So that's just one example of how we measure success.
Great. We're going to run out of time, I know, but I'm going to come to Maria in just a minute. But I'll just remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're talking about the successes and challenges for Healthy Acadia in work Hancock and Washington counties in the last 25 years. Just heard from Katie Friedman, who's the Community Health and Food Programs Director. Maria Donahue is the Community Health and Prevention Director. And Elsie Flemings is the Executive Director of Healthy Acadia. Again, a quick example, Maria, of something that you feel is really successful, and how did you know it was successful?
Sure. So like Elsie mentioned, we do track numbers of things, and Katie mentioned as well. So like numbers of youth that are involved in different programs, number of youth that receive a particular kind of educational curriculum. And then we also look at some longer term measures, things like in the youth and in the substance prevention world, looking at like past 30-day and lifetime use of alcohol or cannabis or prescription drug use. Among our youth. And we use a statewide survey called the Maine Integrated Youth Health Survey. That survey is conducted every other year, and it's incredibly important to our work so that we can look at these trends over time, because these things are not really easy to measure here at the local level. And so that survey, we're able to get data depending on the participation from year to year. We can sometimes get data at the county level, also at the district level. So looking at both Hancock and Washington counties combined, and then at the state level, and we compare our rates to state rates. And so just as one example of a measure, so past 30-day alcohol use for high school students, we look at trends over time. And for this one, we've seen some decreases in recent years. So in 2021, the reported rate of past 30-day alcohol use among high school students in the Downey District was 21.9%. It decreased slightly in 2023 to 21.7%, and then in 2025, down to 16.7%. So fewer teens are reporting using alcohol in the past 30 days, which is great. And hopefully that's in part to some of the programming that we're doing with our local youth. But that's just one example of what we look at.
Great. Again, I think that's what funders are looking for. That's what the community is looking for, is that we're trying to know whether our programs are successful. Let's talk about some other challenges. Maybe Elsie, just a couple of examples of what are you looking at as you look ahead, and then we'll come back to whatever you're celebrating. But what as you look ahead, what are some of the things that you worry about? What keeps you up at night that you worry about in terms of the future of this kind of work?
Yeah, no, great question. Well, certainly what occupies a good amount of my time is making sure to secure the resources to keep this incredible work going and evolve it as we talked about, and have the capacity to launch new initiatives as the need arises. So I spend a lot of time writing grants, fundraising, et cetera. And that's, and that's a challenge on multiple levels right now. And we're also so grateful for the support that we have, the community, and our partners more broadly. So that's certainly one area of work. And then in general, I mean, just the challenges that our communities are facing, which evolve over time. It's just it's the heart of our work, and it is close to our hearts, and it is it is a challenge. I mentioned briefly earlier, I think, that we run an overnight warming center. This actually came very much along the lines of what we talked about, came from an extraordinarily unmet need that we and partners were experiencing. Not to get too much here, but the in as COVID as the COVID rent relief era was coming to an end, and as we had ramped up our services running a community recovery center in Ellsworth, the Inspire Recovery Center, we were working more directly with a lot of folks. Hundreds of folks were coming through our door with this daytime recovery center, and we were seeing increasingly that they were leaving at night when we were locking our doors in the evening and going out into the woods or to park benches or imminently losing their housing. And it was a fall of, I think, 2022. And we knew we needed to do something. We really, like, our staff, I mean, this was close to, we were just boots on the ground, frontline. And so we ended up convening a meeting, pretty quick turnaround, with winter approaching. 60 folks came on Zoom from all areas of this world of thinking about emergency housing. And that actually was the seeds for what is now our Downeast Housing Collaborative, thinking across the continuum. But at the time, we were honed in on emergency housing supports for the coming winter. We identified collectively that a warming center was what we really needed. So we have Emmaus, an incredible homeless shelter, typically full, very full waiting list, et cetera, and not with that kind of last minute, like I show up at the door and have nowhere to go, capacity. And so one thing led to the next, and we, in this case, the partners really looked to us to lift that up. We had the ability because we had the building that was set up as a community recovery center. We basically created a 24/7 service. So during the daytime, it was still the community recovery center, and at night, it became the warming shelter. And we are just finished our fourth season. It's for about 6 months of the year. We're open 7 nights a week. And serving, and typically full throughout, serving 20 to 25 plus people each night. Not the same folks. We then also engage them in services and see a lot of success. And then more folks come because of the trust built, et cetera. So that's an example of success, which I guess, we've talked about, but also just those ongoing challenges. And so we're still seeing folks who are do not have the access to the supports that they need, who are in really, really vulnerable situations. And so there's just so much more to be done. So, challenges like that really hit close to home, across our communities and across areas of work. And so we're just continually looking for ways to be of benefit.
We're going to have a couple of lightning rounds where I ask each of you a short question. But before that, Elsie, how can listeners find out more about the great work that you and your colleagues are involved in? Website?
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. So, website, come to our website, www.healthyacadia.org. You can sign up for our newsletter. We send out a once every 2 week newsletter with lots of information about things happening, and
And you've got a
et
birthday celebration coming
cetera.
up in Steuben. Talk about
And
that
then we have a ver
briefly.
yes. Yes, very good. So we are celebrating 25 years. We would love for you to join us. So anniversary celebration on September 19th at Tunk Joy Bakery in Steuben. You can find more about it on our website. Also, if you sign up for our newsletter, you'll get more information. We have an online auction that's going to be happening the week before that. We'd love for you to join us and join us in any way and reach out to us in any way if you want to be more involved.
Great. So, lightning round. First one is, what are you proudest of as you consider 25 years of work? So, let's start with that. Start with Maria. What are you proudest of as you look back over your time with Healthy Acadia?
Great. So I'm just really proud to be part of the growth of this organization, despite the relatively large size that we are today compared to where we started. Our organization has been flexible enough to respond to changing community needs as they arise. And I'm just really proud that Healthy Acadia is seen as a public health leader in Down East, Maine, and beyond for some of our programs and that community members and organizations turn to us.
Katie, what are you proudest of?
I'm just proud of the growing and sustaining these incredibly impactful food access programs. To look back to when I started with the organization, the Katie back then, I don't think would have ever conceived that we would have two farms within our organization, and this amazing network of partners, and just the amount of food that we're getting out to people. It's humbling, and it's beautiful.
Great. Very briefly, Elsie, what are you proudest of as you look back?
Oh gosh, I guess I'm just really proud and honored of for the opportunities that we've had to positively impact people's lives, help people overcome barriers, help them build the communities and health that they see. And also to see that so many people we've supported on their brave journeys through adversity are now leaders within our organization, within our broader communities, and are doing this work in so many incredible ways.
And very briefly, Elsie, what do you hope for the future? Two or three words.
My hope is we just can keep going for the next 25 years and beyond, doing what we're doing and evolving to be of even greater benefit and impact.
Katie Friedman, what's your biggest hope there?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I just want to see veggies growing in the ground year after year, and feeding our communities and enhancing the beautiful landscape of our communities as well.
Great. Maria Donahue.
I'm just hopeful for all the programs we have with youth that are building resilience and leadership, and sense of belonging. And I'm really hopeful about the work that we're doing to help address healthcare workforce shortages as well.
Great. Great. Well, we've come to the end of a very short hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our program can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for new topics, please email us news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balnane House Highland Music recording. Thanks again to our wonderful guests here talking about Healthy Acadia. Elsie Flemings, Executive Director, Maria Donahue is the Community Health and Prevention Director, and Katie Friedman, Community Health and Food Programs Director. Thanks to those of us, excuse me, our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program and to College of the Atlantic for production. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns, and we're wishing you a good afternoon.